8:05, so we're going to start. Welcome to Shiur number 2 of this pop-up pre-Pesach series. Thank you so much, Rabbi Rosenzweig, for teaching once again this week. And again, this Shiur is sponsored by Shalom and I, in memory of my mother's Mira Leah Bas Tzvi Halevi. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rebecca, again for sponsoring. We hope that your mother's neshama should have an aliyah. And we dedicate tonight's learning in her honor. And then thanks again for coordinating the good work of Lomdei Laura Marian over the last year or so in the neighborhood. So welcome everybody to Shiur number 2. Tonight, I was inspired a little bit by the comments after the last year, especially from Aliza, who I see there moving around, and David, who's here, to talk about a little bit about Pesach and Chag HaMatzah and the relationship between the two of them. And so I want to talk about the Korban Pesach. First, let me talk about what a central role the Korban Pesach plays in the Haggadah and in Hallel. So I'm going to share my screen. I'm going to do two things. I'm going to share my screen, and I'm also going to drop in the chat a link to the source sheet. So everybody could choose whichever one they think is better for them, but I will definitely share my screen. Okay. So the highlight of the Seder, you know, in the times of the Gemara and the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and even in the Gemara's presentation of it, is the Korban Pesach. There are some remnants of this in our contemporary Haggadah, though of course it's not as strong. But for example, when we start Magid, we start off with Halach Ma'anya, and we say, Kol Ditzrich Yese V'Yifsach. Anybody who needs should come and join us for our Korban Pesach. The standard view is that this is referring to the offering of the Korban Pesach, which used to be part of the Seder. Correct? So it's an allusion to the Korban. In Magid, again, later on, there's a very famous statement of Rabbi Gamliel, which we quote. It appears in the Mishnah. Rabbi Gamliel says, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosh Advar Melo Pesach Lo Yotza Yidei Chavaso. Somebody who fails to state or describe or characterize these three things on Pesach has not fulfilled his obligation of the night of the Seder. Those three things are Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. Pesach, according to most commentators, being the most important of them. Without Pesach, most people think there's no real mitzvah d'oraisa of Maror. Nowadays, maybe it's only rabbinic. Matzah does stand on its own, but in principle, the matzah and the Pesach and the maror are all supposed to be joined together. But at least at a minimum, Pesach, the Korban Pesach, is one of the central themes of the Seder. And if you don't refer to it, then you didn't fulfill your obligation of the night of the Seder. That's another reference to the Korban. David, was that?
Sorry to give you a hard time so quickly, but the Pesach has to be brought for the members of a family and whatever cohort. So you can't, right, when it says Kol Ditzrich Yetev Yifsach, you couldn't add people kind of Lachar Maisa into the Seder.
Yeah.
If it were referring to the Korban Pesach. But
yeah, Tosfos Rid explicitly says that it's referring to the Korban Pesach. And you know, people have different solutions to try to explain how you could add somebody onto your Korban later, but he doesn't eschew that interpretation of it. He runs with it, meaning he still embraces the fact that it's referring to the Korban Pesach, even though it creates these other questions. David, so the problem is really not mine. The problem is for other commentators, how they want to defend that.
Right, okay.
But the standard view is that it's still referring to the Korban Pesach, and that's why that question arises, right? How could you add them on so late?
Right.
In the Manishtana, not in our version, but in the standard version of the Manishtana that the Mishnayos have and that the Rambam quotes, the Rambam Chametzu Matzah in the 8th Perek talks about the four questions. So the first question the Rambam has is dipping. Why do we dip twice? The second question is, why do we have only matzah? And the third question is, why is the meat roasted rather than cooked? Right, the Korban Pesach was roasted, it was tzali, rather than having cooked items on the table also. So the Korban Pesach was one of the standard things that somebody would look at the Pesach table and see was different at the Seder. because the way the korban was prepared was different from the other meat that you would eat during the year. So even in the Manashtana, you have an example of the korban Pesach featuring prominently. And then as you move away from Magid to the end of the Seder, of course, we have Korech. What is Korech? Korech, we wrap together matzah and maror. But we say Zechel Amiktash Kehillel, that Hillel was Korech, Pesach, matzah, maror together. L'kayim, ma'ashenemar al matzos umarorim yochlu, right? The real mitzvah is to eat the Pesach together with the matzah and maror. We have Korech as a remnant of it. But more importantly, what we call Shulchan Orech, which today is just a meal, right? Literally just a meal. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, that was when you feasted upon the Korban Pesach. Right? So Shulchan Orech wasn't just a normal Yantif Suda. It's when you fulfilled what the Rambam calls one of the 613 mitzvos, eating the meat of the Korban Pesach on the night of the 15th. The Achlu Es HaBasar B'Layla Hazeh. That's a positive commandment. So Shulchan Orech was dominated by the Korban Pesach. And then at the very end of the Seder, when we have Hallel, the standard flow of the Seder back in the times of the Beis HaMikdash was you would have your Shulchan Orech. So you'd start off by eating the Korban Pesach. Then you would eat whatever else you wanted to eat at the meal. And you would have to finish the meal by doing what? What was the last thing you'd have to do at the meal? Somebody help me out here.
The afikoman.
Well, the afikoman is what we do today. Today, you finish the meal by eating afikoman, which is what? Matzah.
Right.
But in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, what did you do?
Finish the whatever's left of the korban?
Yes, exactly. The last thing you had to eat at your meal was you'd take another a portion of the korban Pesach, and that's how you finish the korban. You can see the Rambam says that explicitly here. Halacha Zayin in the eighth parak of Chametz Matzah. At the meal, you would sit down, you would make a bracha, Asher Kedushanu Misosav Etzivanu Al Achilas HaZevach, and you would eat from the Chagiga, and then you'd make another bracha, Asher Kedushanu Misosav Etzivanu Al Achilas HaPesach, Ve'ochel Migufo Shel Pesach, and then you would eat directly from the meat of the korban Pesach. Then you'd go ahead, eat the rest of your meal. Halacha tes, the Rambam tells us, uvachrona, after you eat whatever else you have in your meal, ochel mi basar ha-pesach afilu kezayis, ve'eino toy macharav klal. You're not allowed to taste anything after eating the korban Pesach. So nowadays we're stuck with the taste of matzah for afikomen. But back in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, the last thing you ate was a good piece of your korban Pesach roast. Right, so it's a different type of ending. And then when you have that taste in your mouth still, what did you do? What did you say? You benched, of course, but right after benching, you say you finish Hallel. So you were reciting Hallel upon completion of your consuming of the Korban Pesach. You can see that's the Rambam in the next halacha, halacha yud. Right after you eat this last portion of the Korban, you pour the fourth cup, the Gomer Olav Es HaHallel, and you finish reciting Hallel on it. Etc., etc. And this we know from the Gemara is that there's a very tight connection between reciting Hallel on the night of the Seder and the Korban Pesach. The Mishnah tells us in Pesachim Tzadihei Amid Aleph, this is on page 2 in the source sheet, it tells us that the Pesach Rishon, meaning what we call Chag HaPesach, Ta'un Hallel Ba'achilaso, you have to say Hallel as you're eating it. Right, which is, you know, not exactly at the moment that you're eating it, but in connection with eating it. So you would eat the afikomen, which was your korban Pesach, and then you would bench and you go straight into Hallel, which is a way of conjoining this thing of Hallel with the korban Pesach. Okay, and that captures the idea that Hallel, that the korban is related to our saying of praise as well.
Excuse me, I don't want to detract you from what you want to say, but I am trying to visualize this. How did this happen? Were there altars, or at least, for lack of a better word, fires that thousands of korbanot outside of the Beit HaMikdash, that thousands of korbanot were burned, and then they were, or at least partially burned, and then brought into the Beit HaMikdash? I can't imagine that everything was done in the Beit HaMikdash.
We'll see. We'll look at some of these descriptions in a minute. But yeah, it was like Meron on steroids.
Really?
Yeah, we'll see some of the depictions in the Mishnah, but it was a huge affair. It was a huge event. Yeah, it was the place to be. You know, it's like, right, you see the images from Mecca, right, when people go, and it's
right,
comparable in dimensions. So you see that halal also is connected to the eating of the Karban Pesach. Now, I want to point out that while the Karban Pesach dominated the Seder and Magid, or parts of Magid and Halal and Shulchan Aruch and Korech at the times of the Beis HaMikdash, it also dominated the day of the 14th, meaning the day leading up to the Seder. Right? It wasn't just the night of the 15th. The whole day of the 14th was organized around the Karban Pesach. So let me give you some descriptions of this, of what was happening. If you look here on page 3 of the source sheet, you start off, you have the Rambam in Karban Pesach Aleph Aleph. And he tells us that there's a positive mitzvah to slaughter the Pesach on the 14th day of Nisan after Chatzos. So really in the afternoon, that was the obligation for all of the Jews to come up to the Beis HaMikdash and bring their Karban. And we're told that it was a festive affair. So you could see, we'll just go to the Rambam's description, just skip down to bottom of page 3. The Rambam in Karban Pesach Aleph Tes says, citing the Mishnah, there were three main groups. They all took turns going into the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash could only contain so many people. But everyone would show up there with their Karban, and you would basically fill up the Heichal until it was totally full. Okay. We're told this. Let's see. Here the Rambam tells us, Ketzad Nishchat, how was it slaughtered? This is on page 4 of the source sheet. Nichnisa Hakata Rishona Ad Shetismale Ha'azara. The first group of Jews would go in until the entire courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash was full. Vinoalin delaso sa'azara, you would close the doors of the Beis HaMikdash behind them, and then they would all slaughter their Karban Pesach there. So Emily, I think this should answer your question, right? They'd literally pack in the house.
I get it. Right. Thanks. I'm so glad.
Okay, good. And you could see it was also a pretty joyous occasion. V'cholzman shehin shochtin u'makriven, and so long as people were shechting and bringing their karbanos, the Leviim were standing there on site singing halal, right? So there was a musical accompaniment, and they would repeat halal as many times as they needed until that group finished. When that group was done, they would leave, and they would take their Karban Pesach that was slaughtered out, and they would start preparing it. You know, they would start roasting it, right? Everyone, I guess, came with their mangal and prepared it right outside the Beis HaMikdash. Now, this went on in three different waves, the Gemara suggests, and the Rambam recites. And by the way, every time a group finished, they would do a big tekiya, token shalosh tekiyos b'chatzotzros, tekiya trio tekiya. Every time a wave was done, so not only were the Leviim singing, there was also a blowing of shofar, blowing of the chatzotzros. And you had all these Kohanim, you know, who are standing on hand holding these golden and silver utensils to help out with the Avodah. So it was very festive and very regal affair. Okay, that's in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, clearly in those days, the Erev Yontif was a major celebration. Right? On the 14th, you weren't doing last minute, you weren't setting your table up at home, you weren't doing last minute Pesach cleaning, right? The action was all on the Beis HaMikdash, right? That's where the excitement was. And many poskim, the Shla mentions this, but even earlier poskim and Ashkenaz mentioned this also. They say that nowadays that we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, we ought to have some commemoration of the festivities that they had on the Erev, on the day leading up. You know, we don't have as much of a celebration, but he suggests that just like our davening replaces karbanos, so too, since in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, they would bring the karban. Nowadays, in lieu of that, people should spend their Erev Yontif studying the laws of the Karban Pesach, reciting the ritual of the Karban Pesach. And if you look at many Haggadot, actually you'll see before the Seder, they say, oh, there's a custom to recite all these nice psukim and to go through the Rambam in order to commemorate that this itself was a very important day in and of itself. Right? So in the last year, Eliza and David were saying, oh, I think Eliza mentioned Rav Gigi from Gush, that maybe there really is a separate Yom Tov status to Erev Pesach on its own, right? It was such a celebration unto itself. So I want to point out a few things that support that that point of view. So I want to move to this section over here, Erev Pesach Kemoed, which I have on page 4, the notion that Erev Pesach has a bit of a status of a moed unto itself, distinct from that's what you were calling Chag HaMatzos last week, Eliza and David. And I want to ask, what is the character of this Yom Tov, or the day leading up to Pesach? So I think the place to start here is in Vayikra Chaf Gimel. Vayikra Chaf Gimel is called Parshas HaMoadim. It's the Parsha in the Torah that enumerates all the holidays. Elem Moadei Hashem, Mikra'i Kodesh, Asher Tikru Osam B'Moadam. These are the holidays that you should proclaim them in their times. Correct? So what's the first holiday that we get?
Pesach, I assume.
Erev Pesach, right.
Right. That's the trick question, right? Yeah. The first holiday that you get is not Pesach, it's Erev Pesach, exactly. So you see in Pasuk Hey, Bachodesh Arishon, Ba'arba Asar Lachodesh, Bein Harbayim Pesach Lasha. Right. So the preceding Pasuk says these are the holidays, and it says, oh, on the 14th day in the afternoon is Pesach, and then we're told, oh, and on the 15th day you have Chag HaMatzos. This is why David was telling me last week. David, you're with us, right? This is why, let me make sure David's here. I have to make sure that he's following along. This is why David was telling me last week that it's not Erev Pesach, it's Pesach, right? The 14th day is Pesach and the 15th day is Chag HaMatzos. Now,
what about the custom of the firstborn's fasting?
Yeah, that could also be related. Good. That's an interesting thing. I'm not going to bring that as an example there because that minhag might be a little different, but I'll give you some examples that show that it has the status of a holiday. But do we all agree on the psukim in the psukim presentation? Yeah. And that's, so it's just very meduyak in the way the Torah presents it as distinct from the later discussion of matzos, of Chag HaMatzos. And by the way, the Chizkuni, who is one of the Bali Atosos in the 12th century commenting on the Torah, makes this point very nicely. You could see here in the highlighted section, this is on page 5 in the source sheet. He says, Bein Arbayim Pesach, Erev Yom Tov Harishon. So the eve, the day before the first day, V'halayla and the night, Nikru Pesach, are called Pesach. Why are they called Pesach? Al Shem Shasukin B'Karban Shen Nikrakach. Because that's when you spend time with the Karban. Aval Sha'ar HaChag, Milel Rishon Ve'elach Nikra Chag HaMatzos. So there's actually this distinction where from the 14th in the afternoon till the evening, including the Seder, is called Pesach, because that involves the whole celebration of the Karban Pesach. And then there's a little overlap, you know, the Seder night and onward is also Chag HaMatzos. So I think the Seder is like the nexus where it's both Pesach and Chag HaMatzos at the same time on his telling of it. Does everybody see that analysis? Yeah, it's a very cool analysis. But notice that it's because Al Shem She'asukin B'Karban. It's a holiday in virtue of everyone being involved in the Karban. Not vice versa, right? It's not that we're involved in the Karban because there's some antecedent status to Erev Pesach, but the opposite. Erev Pesach has the status of being a Karban in virtue of it being the time of the Karban Pesach. Does everybody see that? Yeah. So that's a very important point that I'm going to come back to in a second. But what's the evidence that it has the status of a holiday? So there's a few interesting dinim that we see here. Number one is that there's some minimal, but some prohibition of work, not the type of work that's prohibited on Shabbos, but the type of work that's prohibited, let's say on Chol HaMoed, for example. So you could see here, the Gemara in Pesachim, the Mishnah in Pesachim Daf Nun, says this. In a place where it's customary to do melacha up to the afternoon of the day, that's permissible. You could just follow the custom. But if you're in a place where it's customary to not do work at all on Erev Pesach, then you have to follow the local custom as well. But notice the assumption here is that everybody agrees that you don't do work in the afternoon on Erev Pesach. Right? The debate in the Mishnah is only up to Chatzos. But after Chatzos, everybody agrees that you don't do labor. And the Gemara says, well, isn't that true for every yontif? Every yontif, you're not supposed to do malacha. You're supposed to be preparing for Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, no, Erev Pesach is different. Erev Pesach is different in its prohibition of Erev Yom Tov. Why is that? So let me give you Tosos' explanation. Tosos in Pesachim Daf Nun, the top of page 6 here. Tosos says, the reason why there's a labor prohibition on the Erev Pesach, Omeri B'Shem Riva, that he found this commentary in the Yushalmi that explained, why is Erev Pesach different from every other Yom Tov, that there's a real Malacha prohibition from Chatzos and onwards. And he says, Mishum Dizman HaPesach MeChatzos Ve'Elach, because the time of the Korban Pesach was from the afternoon and onward. Everybody see that? So because it's the time of the Korban Pesach, it comes with this labor prohibition. Everybody see that? And he even thinks that maybe this is a biblical type of prohibition. Again, it doesn't prohibit all the types of work that are prohibited on Yontif, but certainly all the types of things that are prohibited on Chol HaMoed would be prohibited on Yontif because it's simply the Zman HaPesach. So that's one piece of evidence for this prohibition, for the status of a holiday in virtue of it being the time of the Pesach. Now, there's the Rambam has a similar view. I'll just give you this as an example quickly. The Rambam in Yom Tov Ches, Yud Ches, says the 14th day of Nisan is prohibited by Asiyas HaMelacha, just like Chol HaMoed. Why? He says it's prohibited from Chatzos and onwards, Shehu Zman HaShchita, because that's the time when they would slaughter the Korban Pesach. So he clearly has a similar view that there's some special status in virtue of the Korban. Now, there's another piece of evidence to this that I have here from this Rambam in Chametz Matza Aleph Ches. What do we know that's special about Erev Pesach in extending some of the rules of Pesach? What gets extended from Pesach from Chatzos and onwards? Lisa, you have to unmute yourself. Oh, Isaac?
Sorry, the chametz?
Yeah, the prohibition of chametz, right? Chametz is aser from midday and onwards. So the Rambam, it doesn't start at the night, right? It starts in the afternoon. So the Rambam explains, it's prohibited to eat chametz on the 14th day from Chatzos and onwards. Why is that? And the Rambam says, if you eat chametz on the Erev Pesach, you get malchus min haTorah. Because it says, lo sochal alav chametz. You shouldn't eat chametz on it. Kilomar al karban pesach. Now, it doesn't mean to prohibit this literally to eat it with the karban pesach. You can't eat the karban pesach until nighttime. The Rambam says, what that means is that you can't eat chametz from the moment that it's already the time of when you're supposed to slaughter the pesach, which is from the afternoon and onwards. So you could see that because it's the time of the karban pesach, that triggers the prohibition of eating chametz, even though it's not yet the normal holiday of the 15th. Okay, but here's another aspect of halacha that's affected by this. So if you look here on page 6, somebody have a question? No? Okay, so if you look here on page 6, bottom of 6, top of page 7, what about an avel who we know that Yom Tov cancels avelus usually, right? Familiar, if you're an Avel and then Yom Tov comes, so the Yom Tov cancels the Avelos. So the Rama tells us, you know, that if you bury a mace within 7 days of a holiday, the Regel is Mivatel, the rest of the Avelos, etc. Now, he says, if it's Erev Yom Tov in general, not just Pesach, you're allowed to wash up and take a haircut right before Yontif. And the Rama adds, Samach l'chashecha. Meaning, so let's say your Avelos would end on Yontif itself. there's like a few, you have like a 2 hour buffer where you're allowed to get a haircut, you're allowed to shave. That's for any yontif, for Sukkot, Shavuos, etc. But the Rama adds, this is the next line, but Erev Pesach, it's permissible to clean yourself up and end your Avelos even from Chatzos. Right? You don't have to wait. It's not just like the hour before Yontif, a time to take a shower. From midway through the day, it's already permissible to end the Avelos. Dehainu mizman shchitas ha-Pesach ve'elach. Because that's the time of shechting the Pesach. Right? So you see here that there's some special status to Erev in virtue of it being the time of the Karban. And look here, what's the source for this? Like, what's the basis of this halacha? So the Vilna Gaon, who loves to bring, you know, sources for the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch, and where do they get this from? So he writes here, Erev Pesach has this special status, Nira Dechashiv Kimo Moed. He thinks it's considered like a holiday. So we see that formulation. Why? Dekra Chashvo Bisocha Moadim. Because the Torah included it amongst the other Moadim. Meaning that's the pasuk that we just read a few minutes ago in Parshas Emor.
Great.
Right? It's a very nice diak. The Gruz, you know, doing first order analysis of the Torah. He's saying, look, why does the Torah start off Ele Moadei Hashem? These are the holidays and listing Pesach. Oh, it must be to teach us that it's a Moed in its own right. And that's why from Chatzos, from Bein Arbayim onwards, the Avelos is put to an end. Okay. There's another formulation of this view. Rabbi Hananel was one of the early Rishonim from North Africa, has a comment like this in Psachim, where he says that Erev Pesach could override a type of Avelos. Deha mishas ha-Pesach ki yom tov chashav. Right, already from the time of the Karban Pesach, it's already considered a type of yom tov. And he tries to demonstrate this from the fact that they would say Hallel when they would bring the Karban Pesach. Remember I mentioned earlier, the Levim were singing Hallel on the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, oh, that must show that there's some holiday type dimension to the day. And that also explains why it would block Aninus, which is the stage before Avelos, from going into effect. Okay. So I think this makes a pretty good case that there's some special status to Erev Pesach as the Yom Tov. Now, the question I want to ask everyone here is why should Erev Pesach have the status? What causes it to have the status as a Yom Tov?
They have the status.
Aliza, you could take a stab at it. Good. Thinking out loud for it helps us all, you know.
I thought it was the fact that you're bringing the korban that right?
Yeah, so it seems like it's the fact that you're bringing the korban, but why should the fact that you're bringing a korban transfigure the day into a holiday?
Well, are we remembering, you know, you give Hallel clearly when there's a miraculous event, Shira rather. Is it the Shira? Because it commemorates, it's not them leaving, it's them getting ready, right? Hashem, I know we're not supposed to say passing over their houses.
Whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I think that's the right way to go. I'll tell you what my father likes to say. He likes to say that it's a mistake to think that the Karban Pesach only has significance connected to the Chag of Pesach.
Right.
The Karban Pesach is just such an important religious event, action, ritual in and of itself, that the celebration of the ritual of the Karban Pesach creates a holiday surrounding it. Right. But we have to understand what is so special about the ritual of the Karban Pesach, right? Well, like what does it commemorate?
It commemorates
God saving us.
But yeah, God. Go ahead, Emily.
No, but also freedom. I mean, just think of it. This is the first time in hundreds of years that they had the freedom to make a korban.
Yeah, right. That's
a big deal.
100%. That's a huge part of it. This was clearly the bringing of the Karban Pesach was clearly a momentous occasion, right? The first time that B'nai Yisrael as a people were going to undertake this action. So you could say here two things. I summarized it right here. On the one hand, the Korban Pesach, you know, like the rest of the events, really captures the providence of the event, right? Eliza said we shouldn't say skipped over, passed over, but something about the selection of the, right, the Jewish households versus the non-Jewish households during Makas Bechoros, right? They were told to prepare the Korban, and then they put the blood on the outside of the doorposts. And there was this amazing thing that God or the spirit of Hashem that came and attacked the firstborns of the Egyptians left untouched all the Jewish households. So that was a remarkable act of providence from the divine side. But even more importantly, arguably, is the fact that the Jewish people, right, had this faith to, right, take the thing that was the God of the Egyptians, tie it to their homes, right, 4 days in advance. This was like a huge socially controversial thing to do, right? And say, oh, we're going to slaughter this in 4 days. I mean, arguably, that's, you know, my father likes to emphasize this in his description of the Chag. You know, what greater act of faith was there from the Jewish people in believing that they would be saved from Mitzrayim than really putting their necks on the line and demonstrating their commitment to this vision that Moshe put before them? Right. And that, you know, there's a beautiful medrash that gets quoted. So here you have it on page 9 in Shmos Rabbah, Parsha Tes Zayin. You know, B'sha she'amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe lishchot ha-Pesach, when Hashem told Moshe to slaughter the Pesach, Moshe responded to him and said, Hashem, you know, ha'olam, how could this be? Ha'davar hazeh, Heichan yochol la'asoso. How could I do this thing? Iyata yodea shahatzon Eloheihen shel Mitzrayim hein. Right? Don't you know that the tzon, the sheep, is the god of the Egyptians, right? And if the Egyptians see us that we want to slaughter their gods, yiskalunu, they're gonna stone us, yeah. Right? So Hashem said, chayecha ein Yisrael yotzen mikan ad sheyishchetu es Elohei Mitzrayim le'enayim. And Hashem said, that's exactly right, right? The Jewish people are not going to leave Egypt until they slaughter the Egyptians' gods in front of their very eyes. And that was a remarkable act of faith, of commitment from the Jewish people, right? It was really the first time that they expressed this unyielding commitment to the vision and prophecy that Moshe placed before them. And so it seems that you could say that the Korban Pesach that we take every year is not just commemorating the Exodus from Mitzrayim, but it's commemorating that first step of initiative and faith and trust of Emunah that the Jewish people undertook in Mitzrayim. And that's why the Korban Pesach takes on such important significance for future generations as well. And I'm going to say more about this in a second, but does everybody see the main idea about this Korban Pesach? Right? It's not just like eating matzah where it's an event to commemorate Mitzvah Mitzrayim. It was really this first time that the Jewish people undertook their commitment of Emunah. And we celebrate that for generations every year, distinct from the celebration of the rest of the aspects of the Seder of commemorating Yetzias Mitzrayim. And I want to give a few examples to show this nature of the Korban Pesach, not just to support the main theme, but to also flesh it out further. So here's an example. The Torah introduces the Korban Pesach in Shmos Perek Yud Beis, in Parshas Bo, and the Torah delineates a whole set of rules about how you're supposed to eat it. Not too fast, you're not supposed to break the bones, right? A lot of details. But the very first rule that we get is we're told Zos Chukas HaPesach. This is the law of the Pesach. Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo. No stranger should eat it. What does that mean? What does it mean? No stranger should eat it. So the Unkelos already says it means Kol bar Yisrael di shtamed lo yechal be. Any Jew who cast off his faith and rejected his religion, what we'd say to a mishumad is sometimes a word that's used, shouldn't be allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. The Ramban, you know, quotes Rashi. Rashi says that a Meshumad is somewhat ben nechar, means somebody who has alienated themselves from the God in heaven, right? Nisnacher ma'esav, his actions have become foreign to. And so it's very striking. You get this. The first halacha of the Karban Pesach is that the person who rejects the Jewish faith is not allowed to participate in the Karban Pesach. That's what characterizes this Karban. It's a strange thing, right? So the Sefer Achinuch commenting on this, and by the way, the Gemara in Pesachim, when it discusses this halacha, says this is unique to the Karban Pesach. No other Karban has this rule. So you could see here on top of page 10, bottom of page 9, the Gemara in Pesachim says, Bo kol benecha lo yochal bo mishumados poselas. Ve'en mishumados poselas betruma. This, you know, rule only applies to the Karban Pesach, doesn't apply to Truma, it doesn't apply to other Karbanos. It's unique for this Karban. Why is that? So even though in all areas of the Torah, we generally say that a Jew is always a Jew and we should treat him as a member of the community, the Karban Pesach is different. So I'm going to skip ahead here to the Sefer Achinuch. This is on page 11 in my source sheet. Sefer Achinuch quotes this halacha, Shalo na'achil min ha-pesach li-Yisrael mishumad. Just notice a small point. It doesn't say that it's prohibited for a mishumad to eat it. It says that a faithful Jew shouldn't feed it, shouldn't, you know, assist an unfaithful Jew in eating it. It's an interesting variation. But why is this halacha part of the Karban Pesach? So look what he says. Mishor shei mitzvah zu, because at the heart of this mitzvah is to remember what happened in Mitzrayim, etc. And he says, we eat it, we prepare it, the karban, l'os ulezikaron, as a sign and as a remembrance, shebanu be'oso hazman lachzos tachas kanfei hashchina. Right? That was the first time that we undertook upon ourselves, you know, when we separated that karbanos to enter under the wings of Hashem's protection. Right? When we had that act of emuna that we were going to take the God of the Egyptians and say, hey, we're slaughtering this for our religion. And that's when v'nichnisu bibris ha-Torah v'ha emuna. That's when we took upon ourselves this covenant of faith and the laws of God. Therefore, it's inappropriate, ein ro'i she'nachil mimenu l'mishehu hepech mizeh, she'yatza min ha'klal v'kafar v'emuna. You know, so therefore, it's only appropriate that we not share it with the person who denies the very thing that we celebrate through the Karban Pesach. It's a very sharp interpretation, I think, right? But you see how this halacha captures that dimension of the Karban. Any questions on this interesting halacha? And I think it fits very nicely with the theme.
I just wanted to add that there's really a double edge, and they're not exactly identical to Karban Pesach. Number one, obviously, it's a declaration of faith, but simultaneously, it's a disentanglement from the culture they grew up in.
Exactly.
That's not identical.
It's totally
right. So, and it's unfortunate that we see how tentative that is. Because the first thing they did when Moshe was late was they went back to the Ur culture of the calf.
Yeah.
So it's not so easy to disentangle yourself from a culture in which you've been
that's
brought
right.
up for
that's right.
400 years, right?
100%.
400 years, whatever. Right.
Yeah, so I agree those two points are disentangled. You could disentangle those two points 100% about that, you know, separating yourself from the culture and then the act of faith of undertaking. But, you know, but both of those are consistent with this special celebration of the Karban Pesach, right? Where that was the first act of, you know, distinguishing ourselves and putting our trust in Hashem and Mitzrayim.
Right.
Now, this idea also explains other aspects of the Karban Pesach. This also comes from a point that my father likes to quote, the Psukim and the Medrash on the Psukim. So if you look at both the Pasuk in Shmos Yud Beis and in Bamidbar Tes, Let's look at Bamidbar Tes, which is a bit of a better formulation. V'chiyagor itchem ger, v'asa pesach la'Hashem, kechukas ha-pesach u'chemishpato ken ya'asa. When a convert comes to live with you, they should do a korban pesach. Now, the straightforward reading of the pasuk is that it's important for a convert to bring this korban pesach. And if you look at the Mechilta, here on the top of page 12, we're told when a ger, a convert, comes to join you, he or she shall bring a korban pesach to Hashem. Shomei ani, I would think from reading this pasuk, kivon shenisgayer yasa pesach miyad, that forget about on the 14th day of Nisan, but whenever the person is converting, they should bring a korban pesach. Right. Well, let's say they're converting in the middle of the winter. They should have to bring a korban pesach on that day as part of their conversion process. Talmud Lomar, the Torah says, well, that's not the right way to read it. And the answer is no. They shouldn't bring it on the date of their conversion. They could wait until the 14th of Nisan. But the impression that you get from the Mechilta is that the bringing of a korban pesach is an important component of one's conversion. Right? So it's like, part of, in the same way that the Jewish people initially were inducted into this religion of faith, tachas kanfei hashchina, through bringing the korban pesach, so too for generations, even when an individual wants to join the community of faith, they do so, they initiate themselves through the same act that we did, or that the Jewish people did thousands of years ago, through bringing the korban pesach. So you could see how the korban pesach takes on this significance, especially through this mechilta, distinct from just commemorating the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Seder. No, right? It's almost like this communal, I want to say covenant, or for generations, right? The marking of our acceptance of entering into God's dominion.
It occurs to me, I'm wondering what anybody would think would be a modern equivalent that we might ask of a convert.
Yeah, right. Have a korban pesach that we don't have. It's an interesting question. Okay,
you know, I'm disentangling myself from my previous heritage without being insulting. You know, I wouldn't be too happy with somebody stepping on a crucifix. That would be a little vulgar. but you know, something that say, you know, I'm
that is a very powerful metaphor, though.
Yeah, no, that would be, I would find it a little harsh, but I just threw it out there, something to think about.
Yeah, very, very good analogy. Let me strengthen this this perspective from two other sources very quickly. So throughout Halacha we find a strong analogy between the korban pesach and the bris milah, at least for males. Isaac Moses says you should make aliyah. That's the Isaac. Are you in Israel, or it could be very late if you were? But
unfortunately, no. Okay. Our other brother is
right. I'm a little related to your. Am I a little related to your other brother? Right through the Eliach side.
Yeah.
Right, that's the right. There you go.
Margulies. See? Yeah.
Good family Bikias over here. Yeah. So there you find this connection to the bris milah in a few places. So where do you see that? And by the way, the idea of a bris milah, at least for the males, is we say lachniso lebriso shel Avraham Avinu, right? Entering the covenant of Avraham. So it's kind of this entering into the faith also. And it makes sense that there should be this analogy in halacha between the individual entering the faith through the bris and this kind of bris of the Jewish people entering the faith at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So what are the parallels that we find? Number one is that there are only two positive mitzvos in the Torah, the punishment for which is kares, right? If you don't do a positive mitzvah, that you'll get kares. Usually it's only for negative lavin, but bris milah and korban pesach. And we're also told through the midrashim, we recite this at the Seder and at a bris milah, we're told that the dam, you know, that will be a sign, and the Medrash says very famously that this is referring to the dam Bris Mila and the dam Pesach. You can see this highlighted on my screen, and we always say, quoting the pasuk in Yechezkel, Hashem says, "I will pass over you and see the blood." Ve'arech misboseses b'damayich, ve'omar lach b'damayich hayi, ve'omar lach b'damayich hayi. Or as everybody remember, we say this at a Bris Mila and we say this at the Seder. It's referring to the two blood, the blood of the Bris Mila and the blood of the Karban Pesach. They seem to have this common theme. And let me give one other example where you see these two related. In Yehoshua Perek Hey. So what's happening here in Yehoshua Perek Hey? The Jewish people are about to, they just cross into Israel. They just cross over the Yarden. So this is a major event, right? Isaac said we should, you know, nowadays moving to Israel should be renouncing your foreign culture, right? This is a big deal in Jewish history. They just cross over the Yarden into Israel. And then Yehoshua tells the people, "Aseh lecha charbos tzurim," cut for yourselves a double-edged knife, and perform a bris mila on anybody who's uncircumcised. There's all this literature. Maybe the Jews were uncircumcised in the Midbar for some time. But now Yehoshua says, make sure everyone has a bris mila. Yehoshua makes a charbos tzurim. He circumcises all of Israel, etc. And then what are we told right after they perform the bris mila? So what are the two big things that happen when they walk into Israel? Circumcision for the males. And what's the other big religious event?
Oh, Pesach.
Yeah, Karban Pesach, right? This is B'nai Israel camp out in Gilgal, and they do the Karban Pesach, right? And, you know, it's kind of strange. Like, what does this have? It's kind of a weird interlude in the story of coming in to conquer Eretz Yisrael, right? I mean, what is... So you want to tell me they're uncircumcised. Okay, you could say that's a big deal. They're violating this big commandment for the years in the Midbar. But okay, but you also want to tell us that Pesach passed. It's kind of just, you're telling me they also sat in sukkahs, right? And so they stayed up all night on Shavuos. They probably didn't stay up all night on Shavuos, but that's probably a later custom. But you want to tell me they sat in sukkahs. But you get the sense from the psukim that the Karban Pesach was like a major, important act of commemoration, that they were renewing their faith and commitment. And in the same way that they were doing that through the Bris Mila, the celebration of the Karban Pesach was also marking that initial entree or entrance into Klal Yisrael as a very important bris covenant between the Jewish people and Hashem. So that's why it makes sense why this is right here when they walk into Israel. It's a momentous occasion. They just do the Bris Mila. So you get this Karban Pesach offering as well.
By the way, were women obligated to eat from the Karban Pesach?
So yeah, let's go back to the Rambam's language. I'm pretty sure, yes. Let's see what the Rambam just says to be totally sure about that. Yeah, I think the Rambam says Achilas Basar HaPesach. This is on page one. Yeah, it's a universal obligation.
I would hope so, right?
Yeah, right.
Given itself how important it is. But...
That's right. And I think slaughtering it also is an obligation, just as performed through an agent, I'm pretty sure. Let's just make sure that I get that right. I have this in the discussion of the 14th. Now here's the Rambam's discussion. Yeah, mitzvahs asay lishchot asav pasach. Yeah, I think it's echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha chayav mitzvah zu. Look at that, Emily. You have that explicit here in Aleph. Yeah. And that makes sense, right? It's this universal communal obligation that everyone is bound in, right? The entire Jewish people accepted this upon themselves. Yeah, that's a good point to add to this discussion. Okay. Let me just see if I wanted to make one. So I made the connection to the Bris Mila. Yeah, let me make one last point in this connection, which may support the general theme of the Karban Pesach. So if you look at page 16 in the source sheet, the Karban Pesach occupies a very strange status in the world of Karbanos. it is, in the world of carbonos, you have two types of carbonos. You have carbonos tzibor, a carbon that's brought by the entire congregation. So that's like the carbon tamid that's brought every day in the mikdash, the carbon musaf that's brought every day. That's a carbon tzibor. And then you also have a category called carbon yachid, a carbon that's brought by an individual. You sin, you bring a chatas, right? You want to bring a donation, you bring a ola. But those are funded individually and they're owned individually. So you have those two extreme paradigms, and they have different sets of rules in the Beis HaMikdash. The Karban Pesach is unique, it's distinctive, in that it doesn't fit neatly into any of those categories. So you could see here, for example, in Shmos Yud Beis, Pasuk Gimel, we're told, tell the people of Israel, v'yikhu lahem ish celibes avo celibais. Each household should pick a carbon, right? That sounds maybe individual, maybe a small group. It's hard to know exactly what it is. If the household is too small to consume an entire sheep or lamb, then they should get together with their neighbors and do it b'michsach nefashos, in these bands, right? In these small units, do it together. So even there, it's ambiguous, right? It could be an individual household. There could be a larger group. It's not really clear what the status it is, if it's a group offering or an individual offering. And then we're also told in Shmos Yud Beis Pasuk Vav that v'shachduo so kol kahal adas Yisrael, right? The entire community should slaughter it, which sounds like it's this big, major public sacrifice, right? Almost a communal sacrifice. So the Rambam points out very nicely that the Karban Pesach doesn't fit into either category nicely. So if you look here on page 17, yeah, the Rambam in Perashat Mishnayos in his Hakdama to Maseches Zvachim, which is in Kachim, the Rambam says, look, there are Karbanos Tzibor. That's like the Musaf, the Tamid. Then there are Karbanos Yachid, Shlamim, Ola, etc. And then he says, and then there's this other species, a Karban Yachid, Ke'ain Karban Tzibor, right? A sui generis category of an individual carbon that's like a public carbon. And there's only one thing that fits into this category, and it's the Karban Pesach. Who Karban Pesach sheshochet kol adam biyom arba asar b'nisan. See, each person has to bring it, but it's also brought together as a community. So one very nice way of explaining this special status of the Karban Pesach, and this is my father's explanation, which I like very much, is that yes, it's an individual's obligation, but the Karban celebrates the community of Israel having accepted upon themselves that first act of faith, right? So yes, each person has to bring their own Karban Pesach. Maybe you could get a few other people with you, but the nature of the Karban is like, oh, this is what made the Jewish people as a collective, when they extricated themselves from the Egyptians, as Emily mentioned before, and accepted upon themselves to enter under the wings of the Shekhinah as a people. So it's this Tzibor celebration that each individual has to bring to mark their participating and being a member of the faithful community of the entire Jewish people. And there's something very intuitive about that, you know, why it should straddle the line between being a Karban Yachid and a Karban Tzibor. Let me say, now, I'll mention two further points very briefly. They're not the most compelling points, but they're interesting things to just think over if you want to think about the special status of the Karban Pesach. One is just that, of all the karbanos, this is the only karban really delineated in Sefer Shmos. And most of the karbanos are in Vayikra, right? In the context of the Beis HaMikdash, but the Karban Pesach is discussed in Sefer Shmos in the context of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which really shows you that its significance is historical. Right? It's not like the Karban Tamid, which is brought every morning. It's not like the Karban Musaf, which is about the holidays themselves. this is a carbon that has significance even outside of the framework of the normal operations of the Beis HaMikdash. We're commemorating what the Jews did in Mitzrayim, that first Pesach. And for that reason, you could also explain one of the main rules of the Karban Pesach. I'll just pull this up here on my source sheet. When is the Karban Pesach brought? I have this on page 13. There's normally a rule in the Beis HaMikdash service that you're not allowed to bring any karbanos after the tamid of the Bein Arbayim. Like around midday, they would bring the final karban of the day, and any karbanos brought after that are disqualified. The Karban Pesach is intentionally brought after the tamid shel Bein Arbayim, meaning the Karban Pesach is brought at a time when no other karban is allowed to be brought, when the service of the Beis HaMikdash is already finished for the day. So one way that you could explain that is, again, to emphasize that the Karban Pesach is really a different type of karban, right? It's not like the Karban Tamid that's brought by all of the Jewish people as part of the normal upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not an individual karban that's just a ritual sacrifice. It's brought outside of the framework of normal karbanos to pick out this distinctive status that the karban has. So I just want to go back now and just, I'm going to summarize what we covered in today's shiur, and then I'm happy to stick around for questions. I started off by showing that the Karban Pesach occupies an important place in the Seder. We open with Kol Ditzrich Yesei V'Yifsach, whoever needs to come and participate in the Karban Pesach. We say, whoever doesn't say these three things, Pesach being one of them, doesn't fulfill their mitzvah of the night of the Seder. Kol Shlomar Gimel Dvar Milah B'Pesach. We saw that in the Manishtana, in the original version, the Karban Pesach features prominently in terms of it being roasted, not cooked. When you look at Shulchan Orech and Korech and the Halal at the end of the Seder, those are all really centered around the Karban Pesach that we used to eat. And then we saw that the Karban Pesach actually has independent significance from the Seder. The whole celebration on Erev Pesach seems to rotate around the Karban Pesach. That was explicit in the Psukim. That was explicit in the holiday-like laws, the prohibition of Malacha, the Erev Pesach Chametz prohibition, the nullification of Avelus on Erev Pesach. Those were all explained by it being the time of the celebration of the Karban Pesach. And that's why even nowadays, some people think that it's important that we spend some time reading over the laws of the Karban Pesach, right? Something to commemorate just how special this time was during the Beis HaMikdash period. Then we asked, well, what's so special about the Karban Pesach? Right? Why does it have this special status that it transfigures Erev Pesach into a holiday and that should feature so prominently in the Seder? So we saw this idea of the Karban Pesach captured by the Medrash really exemplifies the first time B'nai Yisrael voluntarily accepted upon themselves the faith and trust in Moshe's vision. But that's the Medrash about they took the God of the Egyptians, they held on to it, they said they were going to slaughter in front of their eyes. And that's probably the greatest act of emunah that the B'nai Israel undertook. And that was their first initiation into the covenant of faith and mitzvahs. We saw that theme captured by the idea of when the Torah introduces the laws of the Karban Pesach, it says, Kol ben nechar lo yochal bo. The person who rejects the faith of Judaism is not allowed to participate in the consumption of the Karban Pesach. And the Sefer Achinuch explained that. He says, because the Karban Pesach exemplifies the faith that we had in coming under the wings of the Shekhinah, we shouldn't share it with somebody who rejects that very faith, right? That would be that would undercut the very theme of the Karban. Then we saw this theme supported by a few other halachos. One halacha was the suggestion in the Mechilta that anytime a person converts to enter the, you know, Tachas Kanfei Hashchina, they too have to bring a Karban Pesach, just as the Jewish people did that first time in Mitzrayim. We saw the connection to the Bris Milah. Bris Milah is always associated with Knesset into Brisot Shel Avraham Avinu, right? The covenant of faith of the Jewish people. And we saw a few parallels between Bris Milah and Korban Pesach. They're both the two positive commandments that don't have that bear with them kares. There's a very special rule that you're not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach unless everybody in your household has a Bris Milah. And we saw in the Yehoshua story, right when they enter Eretz Yisrael, the two things that the Navi relates is the Bris Milah for the males and that the entire community brought a Korban Pesach. Right, so that seems to reinforce that this was a major event. The Jewish people are retaking their land. They're coming into Eretz Yisrael. They're recommitting themselves to their faith. And the two things that are the bris of entering the either bris of Shalav Mavino or Tachas Kanfei Hashchina are the Bris Milah and the Korban Pesach. And then we also saw possibly this theme relates to the special status of the Korban Pesach as both a Korban Tzibur and a Korban Yachid. Because it's a carbon that the individual brings that marks the special formation of that community of faith of the entire Jewish people when we left Mitzrayim. Okay, so that's what I wanted to share about the Korban Pesach. That's, I think, a very helpful for perspective when we think about what we're celebrating over the next week. You know, we sometimes talk about the miracles, we talk about the amazing things that Hashem did for us, but we also have to remember what we as a people committed ourselves to, and that amazing act of faith and belief in Moshe's promise when we put our neck on the line and showed our trust in our leaders and in the God who took us out of Mitzrayim. And that's something that we should serve to reinforce with our children and with our families when we get together to celebrate not just Chag HaMatzos, but also the Pesach dimension of the Seder. If anybody has questions or comments and thoughts, happy to stick around to talk more about it.
Are you raising your hand, Elisa? No? So I just wanted to say that it strikes me.
You just muted yourself.
That that sounds a consistent theme in Judaism. The balance between the individual as an individual and an individual as part of a collective. And we really, we're not supposed to forget that. That's one thing I want to add. So that's right, you know, off and running, as soon as we hit the ground running, that theme is announced.
Yeah.
The second point I wanted to make was, give me a second. I forgot what I was going to say, another time. But I just want to say that how absolutely grateful I am for this shiur. It was so illuminating, illuminating.
Thanks for participating and for your comments. And thanks everybody else for joining and participating. If anybody else's thoughts or comments, feel free to share them. Or I should say, speak now or forever hold your peace.
Oh, thanks. I just wanted to add, I reminded myself, I think that I always thought about this for many years, that even the commandment to find the purest sheep, you know, no mum, that enforces individual responsibility. You can't just take any old sheep. You have to examine, you have to take agency, you have to figure out which one is the best. So obviously for Hashem, you want to give the best. But in addition to the Hashem part, you know, what you're trying to accomplish for Hashem, I think it also reflects the desire for the beginning of the Jewish people, now that they're not going to be slaves anymore, to start taking responsibility for their actions. I'm always trying to visualize. I have to go through the whole herd and see which one's right. Pure. It's amazing. The whole process is just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Isaac, you have a comment? Isaac Moses, who's no longer a bunny.
No bunny coming. First of all, thank you very much. This was great, very convincing how everything hangs together and beautiful. I wanted to I noticed that in the chinuch that you quoted, that you cited, he uses language that sounds a lot like the language we use to describe the Rasha in the Haggadah.
Kafar Beikar.
Kafar Be'emunah. And Hotzi Atzmo Min HaKlal. So I wonder if he's thereby like recommending that we kick him out of the Seder, because that's what he's talking about, is kicking somebody out from eligibility to have the Karban Pesach, which is, if that's true, that's very different from a lot of the rhetoric you hear about the Russia trying to pull him in.
Right. Yeah. Very interesting. I have to think about that. Yeah. It's definitely a tension, a major tension about to what extent we pull people in and, to what extent we think like, no, this is an exclusive celebration for the faithful. And this halacha of Kol Ben Nechar Lo Yochabo forces that issue to a head. Right. Yeah. It's a great point, Isaac. I appreciate that.
This is Rebecca. Just one comment about that is I was also thinking about this tension in terms of Pesach Sheni, that really like Pesach, the Karban Pesach is forgiving in a way that if you're not able, if you're Tameh at the time of Pesach, it's fine. Like you can do it a month later. And so although we're saying exclude the ones who have rejected the faith, like we're not really making such clear delineations on Pesach itself, like, oh, see, everybody who's here, we're the good ones. Everybody who's not here, they're the bad ones. No, like some of those people, they're still going to do it in a month. Like you didn't see them at shul. They're going to do their thing at their
right.
time.
Right.
But it like, also plays with that tension, I think.
Absolutely. There's a second chance for the Karban Pesach. And that too is so important, right? The fact that it's such an important Karban that there's no, like what, we're going to let people lose out on it, like that's not conceivable, right? So there's got to be a makeup date for this Karban, which you don't usually have in other things, right? But and you see in the Torah itself, it's like Bnei Yisrael demand that, right? They say, how could we? The Tamei people say, how could we be left out of the Karban Pesach? We need a makeup date, and then it gets instituted. So I think, yeah, Rebecca, you're totally right. So Rebecca, thank you again for organizing and for sponsoring this year. It's always a pleasure to share Divrei Torah and talk and learning before Yontif. So I want to wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
Right. Yeah, to you
and
too.
A wonderful Chag.
Shalom. Thanks again. Thank Chag Sameach.
Take care.
Thank you. Chag Sameach.